Do you ever wonder what's happening behind the scenes of the multi-trillion dollar fashion industry? In the new podcast, Fashion People, Puck correspondent and 20-year fashion veteran Lauren Sherman and a rotating cast of industry insiders discuss what fashion people are really talking about behind the scenes of the star-studded business, from creative director switcheroos to M&A drama, DTC downfalls, and Met Gala mishaps. Fashion People, a presentation of Odyssey in partnership with Puck, is available now wherever you get your podcasts.
There we go. There we go. Halloween's gone by. Hey, everybody, it's Kai. Welcome back to Make Me Smart. It is the daily edition. I guess we could stop saying that because we've been doing this daily now for a long time. It's Wednesday. Trying to make today make sense. Molly's out. Marielle is in. Hey, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, you know, as we were saying before we turned on the microphones, it has been a day. It has been a day.
Yep. Well, today is actually What Do You Want to Know Wednesday, right?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. It's a good day. It's a good day. Because you know why? Because we don't have to work. We just have to answer people's questions. Oh, my goodness. Mm-hmm. So let's hit it. What's question number one today?
First up, we've got a voicemail question about the stock market.
Sure, geez.
Hey, Kai and Molly. This is Drew in Portland, Oregon. My question is about the news reports that claim the stock market did a downturn in response to the news of the president catching the virus. My question is why?
Well, number one, algorithms. Number two, algorithms. And number three, let's all remember, please, the stock market is not the economy. What happened was that the news crossed that the president had gotten, and let's remember, first of all, it crossed in the middle of the night, East Coast time, like 1 o'clock in the morning, 10 o'clock in L.A., something like that, whatever it was. And I, as I tweeted out that night, I got to find out how many people on the East Coast are up really late at night. I was like, it's 1 in the morning for you people. Go to bed. But what happened was it crossed the wires. All the algorithms picked up on President COVID and decided that was bad. And the futures, as you saw, went, oh, my God, the world is ending. And that's what happened because things are so tense and so uptight. And it is all driven by computers and speed and being there before the next guy is. That's what happened. And look, just to show you how crazy it is. Yesterday, so we're recording this Wednesday. Yesterday, Tuesday, the president torpedoed negotiations. Stocks, of course, fell because that is an empirically bad thing. But today they decided, you know, it's not so bad. And everything was up like 2%. And so, you know, day-to-day fluctuations in the stock market are not good indicators of reality. But that's what's going on, right? It's all computer-driven and algorithm-driven and high-frequency trading-driven and news headline-driven. And that's what's that. That's what's that,
mm-hmm.
You know?
Man, I just feel like my head is spinning.
Yeah.
Every day
yeah.
It's something, you know, it's a different message.
Yeah, every day it is a different message, also from the markets and also from the White House and from this entire economy. And it's crazy making. And I totally get that. I totally get that.
Yeah.
Okay. So Chip in Virginia, here's what he says. A store clerk at a local grocery informed me that since President Trump's transmission, I imagine that must be infection. Consumers have referenced the event mm-hmm. in justifying their bulk buying. I wonder if the data is going to show shortages. That's a great question. And I'm going to let you have the first whack at
yeah.
this.
Yeah, this is really interesting. I imagine that there are people for whom the president's illness finally made this virus real, for one thing.
Mm-hmm.
But then there are also many of us who already took this virus very seriously, for whom this news has been still deeply unsettling. I mean, I'll say for me, I live in New York City. I was here in March and April. I heard the constant sirens, the ambulances bringing people to the hospital all day, every day. You know, my brother works in the ICU at a public hospital and was treating COVID patients with minimal PPE. So I was already very aware of this virus and still finding out that the president had gotten it, that so many of his staff members got it, has dredged up this anxiety and dread this week. And I think that's true for a lot of people. And we know that those kinds of emotions can affect what we buy and how much of it we buy, right? It's called mm-hmm. panic buying for a mm-hmm. reason. And we saw it in the spring with toilet paper. Like, we were not going to run out of toilet paper. There was plenty of that to go around, but people were just like, I need to control something. And so they stockpiled, right?
Yeah.
So this is a very reasonable premise. I will say we haven't seen any major reports of panic buying so far in response to the president's diagnosis. It might be happening. We do know that grocers have been stockpiling, though, to prepare for a surge in sales this fall and winter in case COVID gets worse, which experts expect it to.
Yeah, I will. So first of all, your brother's okay, right?
He is.
Okay,
yeah.
All right.
Thank God.
I will tell you, my wife, who was on the leading edge of stockpiling, that sounds pejorative. She gathered lots of food and squirreled it away in various parts of the house. In the beginning of this thing, she is now going back to the store and buying a little bit extra every time and putting it in the freezer so that in December, when it gets yucky again, because it will, right? Maybe not here in LA because it's going to be warm, but certainly in other parts of the country, so that, you know, we can have a hamburger if we want it. And that's what she's doing. And I think you're totally right that, that's what people are doing. They're settling in for a fall and winter that's going to be maybe not so great, you know?
You know, you've raised an important question here, Kai, which is how many rolls of toilet paper are in your house at this moment?
All right. So look, this is really funny because we were planning a Costco order the other day and she sent me out to the garage to look. Turns out we needed paper towels because we only had a couple. We definitely do not need toilet paper. Let me just put it that way. We don't need toilet paper.
Yeah, you know, I'm living week to week, so now I'm feeling like I should stockpile again.
Gutsy move.
Yeah.
Gutsy move.
I know.
Holy cow.
I know. All right. Well, I think this next question came in for you, Kai.
Okay.
Okay, so Francois in Southern California sent us an email asking, what do you see the role of the military to be on November 4th and afterwards as the results of the election are potentially in honest / dishonest contention? Where would the military stand in case a certain someone clings to power even after being voted out?
So look, this is going to sound like a dodge, but it's really not. There is no role for the military in the political transfer of power in this country. And I know we make a whole big deal out of the peaceful transition of power for 240 years, as well we should, but there's no role for the military. And I promise you that the Secretary of Defense and General Milley, the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs, and all the combatant commanders and the rest of the Joint Chiefs are going to sit on their hands like they should, because they understand what's at stake. They're not going to get involved. And you saw Milley after that whole escapade in Lafayette Square, with him in his fatigues, marching behind the president. He knew, he said later, he knew at the time it was wrong and he should have done something, but he didn't. And the Secretary of Defense said the same thing. I promise you they're going to sit on their hands. That it's, you know,
okay.
They just won't. These are career, not Esper, right? Esper's a West Point graduate. He served active duty. He served civilian in the Department of Defense. He knows which way is up. And look, maybe this is misguided faith in an institution in which I spent 8 years, but there is no role, and I'm going to bet that they're not going to make themselves a role. That's what I think.
So if there is a dispute over the election, it gets resolved by the courts and by Congress?
Yeah, or by the calendar, right? Because let's remember, the president's term expires at noon on the 20th of January every 4 years. And if it's not like he gets to stay because he wants to stay, right? Will there be a hanging chad kind of thing like in 2000 or whatever the dispute is? Yes. Will that be resolved by the courts? Yes. But come the 20th of January, it's done. The term is over. And even if he doesn't physically leave, he won't be the president anymore. And I know I sound like I'm a Pollyanna here. I know I do. But that's the only way I can go forward, is by believing that the institutions are going to work. Now, did I believe the institutions of the Senate and the Republican Party were going to work in 2016? Yes, I did. So maybe I'm an idiot. Maybe I'm an idiot. I don't know.
Well, you know, I feel like I might be failing Francois here if I don't ask the other part of his question, which is he wanted to know, if you've ever tried Hazy Double IPA from Monkish Brewing in Torrance.
I have not. But I'm turning into a big Hazy IPA guy. So I will seek it out.
Well, good.
I'll have a look. Yeah. Well, also, by the way, as long as we're here, let me just get the plug in. And I don't know if all y'all saw it on social, but the video of me and Molly drinking the pumpkin beers is out. And if you haven't seen it, look it up. I'll tweet it out again tonight because it's a fun little 6 or 7 minutes. Well, it's like a fun
three. Yeah, it's fun to watch.
It's like a fun 3 minutes, but we dragged it out to seven. You know, whatever. Whatever.
Yeah, I mean, as we were talking about the other day, like, it is truly joyful watching someone drink or eat something that disgusts them. I loved it.
Thank you very much.
It gave me a thrill.
Oh,
I needed it.
Fair enough. All right, good. So here's one that goes to the question you talked about on Monday about Regal Cinemas announcing it was going to close more than 500 of its theaters nationwide. It's Dee Dee in Virginia, and here's what she says. Just listen to Monday's show on movie theaters. The one thing that struck me was, if movie theaters die, where will the teenagers go? I know I'm ancient, 47, but back in high school in the San Fernando Valley, my friends and I went to the movies every weekend. Before we could drive, it was a safe place for parents to drop off and pick up. After we could drive, we still went because, honestly, what else is there for teenagers to do? That's a fair question. I mean, look, I dropped off my teenagers when they were younger teenagers, like at the theater and the mall. I don't know where they go. I don't know.
Yeah, so it's been a while since I've been a teenager, but I actually texted one of the teenagers in my life today. Okay, longer for you, sure.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, fair enough.
I texted my cousin today. She's 16. And I was like, where do the youths hang out these days? And she assured me that they do indeed go to the movies. She said maybe they would go before the pandemic, like once or twice every couple months.
Yeah.
Yes, with her friends for birthday parties, stuff like that. Now they can't do that, or I guess they could, but she doesn't feel safe. Her mom doesn't feel safe having her do it. So they're mostly riding their bikes and like going to each other's houses sometimes. You know, maybe if movie theaters, there's a lot of hypotheticals here, but if movie theaters do indeed disappear forever, maybe the teenagers will start doing exercise more. Maybe they'll ride their bikes around the neighborhood.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
Maybe they'll stay on the smartphones.
Yeah, I think that's more likely. I mean, of the three teenagers in my house, the 19-year-old doesn't count because he's almost 20, but of the two younger teenagers in my house, they're on their phones all the bleeping time. And frankly, fine. I mean, what are you going to do, right? What are you going to do?
Right, especially now.
I know, exactly, right? All the screen. My guess would be that screen time rules for parents everywhere have gone out the window. And if they haven't, let me just say you are better parents than I am, because my wife and I gave up early on. Early on.
Yeah.
It's just too hard.
Yeah, that's totally fair. Hard.
All right, there we go. That is a Wednesday. We are done. Back, Kimberly's back tomorrow, Thursday and Friday. Send us anything you want to tell us, or questions that you may have, or comments about what we do, or anything at all. Just tell us how you're feeling. Send us a voice memo. MakeMeSmart@marketplace.org. Kimberly's back tomorrow, as am I. Meryl, you have been awesome. I'm so glad we got you on, truly.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, thanks for having me. Make Me Smart is produced and directed by Marissa Cabrera. Tony Wagner is our digital producer. Ben Hethcote is our video producer. And Ethan Peretz is, I hear, the hardest working intern in the business.
You got the memo. That's good. You got the memo.
Erica Phillips writes our newsletters and the Make Me Smart skill on your smart device.
Oh, my goodness. Ben Tolliday engineered today. I can see him through the glass. I have to come downtown because my home internet service sucks. Our theme music was composed by Ben Tolliday and Daniel Ramirez. Bridget Bodner is a senior producer. The executive director? No, she's not the executive director. You're just the director, right, of On Demand? I don't know. Somebody slacked me about that. Is she really the executive director of On Demand? Did she get, like, a promotion? I don't know. Whatever. Anyway, it's Atar Nieves, if she still works here. I don't know. What? Donna's yelling at me in the Slack.
Hi. Beloved intern Ethan Peretz here. On Thursday, October 15th, Make Me Smart celebrates its 300th episode. Now, don't tell Kai and Molly, but we want to surprise them with something special from you. We want to hear how we've made you smart in the past 300 episodes. So tell us something you've learned from Kai and Molly. Record your answer as a voice memo on your smartphone and send it to us at makemesmart@marketplace.org. And as always, thank you for listening and supporting this show.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.